Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Garage Talk Live. I'm Vince Bonfigli. It's July 21st. And we've had a lot of stuff going on in racing this weekend. ARCA was in action. NASCAR was in action. And we'll get into that in a little bit. Our guest today is, and I'd like to welcome her to the show, is ARCA Series driver Sarah Cornett-Ching, who joined us a couple times before, and we'd like to have her on. So welcome to the show, Sarah.
Thank you. How are you today?
Good. How are you? I've been following your path since we first spoke, and you've made some steady progression and some history in the meantime. First woman ever, or highest score woman's finish on a road course. When you were out in New Jersey, how did that feel, taking home that top 10 spot?
That was a really fun race. I had never been on a road course before. That was my very first road course. So the whole thing was a big learning experience, and I had a lot of fun. Definitely something I want to go back and do. We actually plan to run Watkins Glen and VIR with the K&N series this year, just to get a little bit more experience on the road courses. And it was certainly really awesome to make history in my first start. That was a lot of fun.
Well, in all fairness, a lot of these tracks is your first time, and you've had a steady progression from being in the top 20 to now finishing in top 10s in the majority of your starts. You had a little problem at Pocono, and I guess this weekend something happened and you wound up 14th. But as far as a rookie season is going, I don't think you could have asked for anything better.
No, we're having a really great season. We're definitely, every week it seems that I feel more comfortable in the cars, and we're getting closer to the setups that I like and these different places that we're going to. I'm really looking forward to getting back to Salem and back to Pocono. We had a really good run going at Pocono before the motor let go. So we've got a lot of good things to look forward to. And I'm excited for this weekend at ORP. It's another short track. And it's, again, pretty different from anything that I've run on. It's fairly flat. And you enter the corner sort of low, and then you slide up to the wall. And so that's something new again, and we'll go out there and see what we can do.
It's just amazing how you've adapted to all these with just a little bit of practice time. I guess you get more comfortable with the car. I mean, you haven't even been to any of these places twice yet, so that's
not yet.
That's
no,
amazing.
And we really haven't had a whole lot of time testing either. We're just so busy at the shop, and the expense is so high to go out there twice, you know, especially Iowa. That was like a 16-hour drive or a 17-hour drive for us. So just got to get there and try to adapt quickly. I use iRacing a lot on the tracks that are on there. So that was really helpful at Iowa. I felt like we kind of got up to speed right away at Iowa, and basically just use everything that's at my disposal to try to make sure we're fast right off the trailer.
How do you manage to, how is it, see, I've never done any iRacing, and I know a lot of the drivers say they use that. How is it visually to actually go from a video to actual racing surface to, do you really feel the speed in the car you're running? How does it know to transfer over, so to speak?
Yeah, it's definitely not like the perfect testing scenario, because it is hard to tell. Like when the car is getting loose, you rely on what you see in front of you instead of what you feel. Like in the race car, you'd probably be able to notice a lot quicker than on the screen. So there's a few things where it takes some adapting in that, but I've been on there enough now that I'm getting a really good feel for corner and getting slowed down. I'll notice it has a counter at the top, so when you come off turn four and you hit the start-finish line, it'll tell you whether you're faster or slower than your previous laps. You'll know whether you got a good run off the corner or not. You can see when you drive into the corner if you drive in deeper, or if you don't drive in deep enough, it'll give you like a timer sort of deal where it tells you if you're losing time or if you're faster than the lap before. So you can really try a lot of things. And I found at Iowa that you really had to get into the corner and get slowed down and turned get back on the throttle to go. If you try to drive it in too hot, you really lose a lot of time. So just little things like that that you can pick up from the game. And obviously all the tracks are really different. So, I guess it's not a perfect scenario, but it's really good for what it is.
Well, obviously it's working for you because, I mean, I'm looking at all the teams ahead of you in the points, and they're people that have been around for a while, and, you know, I'm just wondering what's going to take to overcome into that sixth-place spot right now. The highest-finishing woman in the ARCA series is a friend of mine, Shauna Robinson, and maybe one day I'll put you two on the radio, on the show together.
Yeah, there you go. No, it's definitely going to take a lot of perseverance. We just have to keep having solid finishes. We had trouble at Iowa. The car was really good. We were in the top 10 all day, and we were running eighth or something like that. And when we put the second set of tires on, we just got crazy loose. The whole rest of the race, we came in and made adjustment after adjustment, try to tighten the car up. And I don't know whether it's just an odd set of tires or if the track changed that much. I'm not sure. It was just so, you know, out of proportion from what I'm used to seeing from set to set. So definitely battled the loose race car for the last half of the race, and it showed because we lost it a few times and backed it into the wall a little bit. Not too much damage, but it put the spoiler down out of the air, which made the loose condition even worse. So it was a struggle. It was one of those races where you just push through to the end and, you know, go home with what you have, and we'll regroup and move on to Lucas Oil and hopefully finish in the top five over there.
Well, that's what we're hoping for, and we'd like to see you staying in victory lane one day, and that would be awesome because you deserve it. You're knocking on the door of moving up to that next tier of guys that always, I'm tired of seeing guys like Austin Wayne Selfenau just got his first win, or Kyle Weatherman, or Grant Enfinger, and Frank Kimmel. I mean, these people are always right there. I know Kimmel's running a partial schedule this year, but usually his name would be up in the top, and to see your name in sixth place, knocking on the door of fifth, just have to get over some of these guys that are always right there. And I think a lot of that should happen, hopefully, I guess, when you start going back to tracks you've been to already, because then you have a little notebook.
Yeah, breaking into the second half of this season is definitely a little bit more comforting. Even though ORP is a track that I've never been to, we did run at Columbus earlier this year, which is a really flat racetrack, and I've run at some tracks now where you run right against the wall. So it's all these little experiences that I can take from each track that I've been to and kind of sew that together in a new track, but just having those little experiences and learning different lines and the way you have to run. You know, Iowa, that was one of the first racetracks that I've run right against the wall like that up on the top groove, and it was a learning experience. It took me about 20 laps of trying it before I could actually, you know, run a decently fast lap time up there. So, like I say, everything we do is learning, and I think that's really going to help us going into Lucas Oil, and I think we're going to have a good run over there.
Definitely, because you seem to retain everything you've learned, and it always seems to play in somewhere, which is a good thing to see. And you know, I keep telling everybody to keep an eye on you, and hopefully, maybe, you know, you might get a call from somebody for the next level. And but don't jump too quick. Get everything down first. I know a lot of people, younger drivers, will get lured by a team that is underfunded at a higher level and go with it just because it's at the higher level. But
yeah,
it doesn't
definitely want to make your choices wisely as you move up. And I think we definitely need to finish this season out. We're looking forward to doing some K&N racing at the end of the year. Like I said, we got Watkins Glen. We're going to run Motordrome and VIR. And we've got a new composite body being built, which looks so awesome. I was over at the body shop yesterday looking at it, and it looks really good. We're going to run that at Richmond, Dover, and Phoenix towards the end of the year. So we've got a lot of really exciting things coming up, and I can't wait to get back racing with NASCAR. It's such a treat to go over there, and we'll see what we plan out for next year. It's not really set in stone yet, but I know that my future is going to involve NASCAR.
Well, I guess, you know, that's the dream. You get into there so you can move up to the, I guess by time the top tier might be called something else, right? You know, after next year, because Sprint's dropping the thing, but their series sponsorship. But who knows? By that time, you'll have enough under your belt and have the right people and get a good deal and maybe be the first woman NASCAR Cup Series. I'll just say Cup Series this way, just in case. But winner and rewrite another history book.
That's the plan. I'd really love to get an ARCA win. That's something that we've really got on the radar. And it seems like every time we go to these tracks, we're just getting a little bit better and a little bit better. So just have to keep doing what we're doing. And, you know, to get off, come off the trailer at a track you've never seen, and we were about fifth or sixth in practice until everyone started doing their mock runs, and then we ended up 10th and then backed it up with a 10th place qualifying run also. It's encouraging to see that, and the team has a lot of confidence in me, and I have a lot of confidence in the race cars. Tony Blanchard does a great job with the setup and working with me to get the feel that I want in these cars. So I'm really looking forward to Lucas Oil. That's the next thing. And like, we have so much going on that I just try to focus on one race at a time. So it should be interesting.
So when do you get back to testing, or not right yet? Maybe, I know ARCA runs a couple of dirt races. I guess that's something you'll probably need to test on.
Yeah, I'm not sure what we have planned for testing. I know Tony owns the dirt late model, but we haven't had a chance to get out in that yet. And I've never run anything on dirt, but from what I'm hearing, the dirt actually packs down so much at those races that basically it doesn't feel like you're on dirt the same way that the dirt cars, you know. That'll be another interesting experience, and I think it'll be good for learning. You know, the more of a loose race car you have to drive, the more car handling control you're going to get, so. I definitely think that'll help me on some of the other tracks once we get past the dirt tracks, and who knows how it'll go, but I'm really looking forward to all these new experiences.
That's pretty cool. What did you think of the actual track at New Jersey? It used to be, when I was on the air up there, because that was only about 15 miles from where I used to live, it took you forever to get there, but I guess what Jersey traffic is, that must have been an experience for you in itself, but what did you actually think of the track itself?
I really like the track. Like I said, I don't really have anything to compare it to. I've never run on a road course before, but I really like the feeling of the car actually like jumping up over a hill and landing, you know, before you get to go into a corner. You never really feel that on oval track at all. And it was actually odd because there's so many right-hand turns that the few left-hand turns that we had, I actually struggled with because the car was, you know, set up more to turn right at that racetrack. So it's kind of interesting to try to find a balance between, you know, having a car that turns well the majority of the course and then kind of just working your way through the other corners so that, you know, a little bit of compromise, I guess. Just totally new experience. I learned a lot. Like I said, never been on a road course, so I guess you're not really supposed to be breaking into the corners as much as I was, and we found that out afterwards. Tony was explaining to me, so I feel like I have a pretty good grasp on everything that we need to do, and turns out I didn't hurt the transmission. The guy at the transmission shop said that I did a really good job of keeping that clean, so that's encouraging to hear, and I think that we're only going to be better when we get to Watkins Glen.
Yeah, Watkins Glen is a little more laid out. It's not as wiggly as a New Jersey Motorsports Park as far as the layout goes, and there is a couple of tight turns there and a chicane. I guess you'll probably hit it on the iRacing just to get a sense of it. But
yeah, the road courses are something that the iRacing is very, very helpful for, because if you know the track and you know the turns and you know where the braking points are before you get there, it comes down to finding speed when you're on the racetrack instead of trying to learn the track. And with the limited practice we get on these race days, it's very helpful to know what's coming up next before you get there.
So how have your pit stops improved since the beginning of the year? They've gotten quicker because they're keeping you in the top 10, but is there anything that needs to be worked on to help team a little bit more, or I think the next thing is like maybe more horsepower and some adjustments.
Yeah, we're pretty limited on horsepower because everyone's on this Ilmor motor. So we're supposed to have all the same power. So it really comes down to who can, you know, carry the most speed through the corners and keep that RPM up. As far as pit stops go, I've learned a ton since the beginning of the year. I've not stalled at leaving the pits in quite some time now. And, you know, you got there's so many things going through your mind when you pull in. You got to pull in, you got to stop where you need to stop, hold the wheel straight, put it in neutral, rev the motor up so it doesn't stall, and then you're waiting on the crew or whoever to tell you when they're done, the adjustments and everything that they're doing, and then you got to take off and make sure you don't hit anyone, make sure you don't speed. It's a lot going on, that's for sure, and I'm sure once you move up to the next level and you got way more people on pit road, it's only going to get that much more hectic. But as far as improving on that, we've definitely leaps and bounds since where we started.
That's good, because it helps the team chemistry knowing you can get in and they can get the tires changed and the car fueled up and get you out quicker and gain a couple spots on the track. So
yeah, we've really got a good group of guys on our pit crew from Excalibur, and they do a great job every week. We haven't had any problems with them. So it's just reassuring to know you pull in and you know things are going to go smoothly.
That's good. Then, you know, like you said, from when you started, you never had to take, an active pit stop before this year, have you?
Nope. This will be the first time. So I've done a lot of them now. I can say that I wouldn't say I'm a veteran, but I can definitely say I have a lot more experience than where we started.
Well, you figure even the veterans have problems, so everybody has a glitch now and again. I guess the only thing you could, do is make sure you keep all four wheels on the track and go as fast as you can and keep it out of the wall. So maybe that next year will come. It just seems like every time I talk to you, a week after that at a race, you seem to be doing better. So I figured if you're hovering in the top 10, who knows, maybe having you on today and you might finish in the top 5 next week, this weekend.
Heck, if that happens, I'll be phoning you every week.
You'll have to give us an update. And like the networks have their on-track reporter. He'll be the ARCA post-race reporter.
Yeah, I guess that would what it would turn out to be. But, yeah, we've definitely got a lot of good things going on over here and just growing like crazy. Our team is really, really strong, and I look forward to seeing what these next few weeks bring. I can't wait till the end of the year banquet, and hopefully we've made some history.
Yeah, if they have the head table with the top 10 and you finish higher than 6, that's a plus. And the question is, would you stick around for next year for a championship, or would you move to K&N and basically have to familiarize yourself a little more?
Yeah, we're not sure what we're doing next year yet. It would be really nice to be able to do some upper level races as well as working with these series that we've got now, and nothing set in stone. We don't want to make any plans that are going to hinder any opportunities, but we definitely have our sights set high. So we'll see as this year breaks down and we get towards the end of the year what we want to do. And more than anything, I'm really hoping we can run some late model races at the end of the year. I got to go test the super late model the other day, and that was a treat to drive. That thing turns way better than the ARCA car, so I'm really excited about hopefully getting out and running some super late model races in Tony's Race 101 car.
I guess the car weight is a lot easier to handle than the ARCA car. I think ARCA cars I don't know how about these days, but they used to be like old Sprint Cup cars that whenever they put out a new rules package, the Cup teams would get a newer car and they'd sell off the older cars and most of the ARCA people would buy them. But a late model, I guess, is pretty much a special design car just for that series.
Yeah, they're substantially lighter. I think they're about 600 pounds lighter. So and lots more horsepower also. Right around the same horsepower as the ARCA car and just a bit more than the K&N car. So you're looking at a much lighter car with quite a bit more horsepower, and I think they even run on a pretty grippy tire. So you get in there and you don't have truck arms, so the thing will turn really, really well, and they just take off. They're crazy. We were testing the other day, and I was like, this is what I need against the ARCA cars. So it was definitely a good experience to have.
That's pretty cool. And I know they had that big race at the end of the year, the Snowball Derby in Pensacola, which is a late model run. You gearing up to maybe get into that?
I'm not sure which one we'll run. We haven't looked at any schedules yet. It'll come down to finishing out our ARCA and our K&N races that we have planned, and then towards the end of the deal, we'll look at some schedules and see which races we want to run. I think I definitely want to run at least one at the end of the year, and if that goes well, then maybe we'll run a few, but just hopes and dreams right now. I really like that car, so I got to convince Tony to let me race it.
I'm sure if you keep doing what you're doing, he won't have any problem with that. How have you and the team grown at this point now that to where your input is, and, you know, do they give you any pointers as well that you use on the track how the other drivers taken to you now that you've been here a while and seem to be nipping at their heels, so to speak?
Yeah, I think as far as giving advice and stuff, the best advice that I get is always from my spotter. You know, when we're learning new tracks, especially to see what other lines other people are running and make sure that I'm driving in hard enough or getting on the throttle soon enough. And those are the kinds of things at these new tracks that, you know, you need a little bit of outside somebody that can see what everyone else is doing as well. So definitely a lot of help from the spotters that I've had this year. And as far as the team goes, communication is huge. You know, you think you're communicating well, but when you start to really trust each other and the crew chief knows what the driver can handle and what the driver doesn't like, it becomes more of a working machine. And I think we started out with two loose of race cars for me, for my experience level, and we're starting to dial them in now where I've got the grip that I like, and that's what my comfortability in the car is what's making us faster every week. And the other drivers on the track are great. I haven't had really hardly any problems with anyone. If we're not fast, I try to stay out of the way, and if we're fast, I race them hard, and we haven't had any problems.
That's pretty cool, and this way they know that you're out there and serious, and because there's always some other, I know, like at Daytona, the first race of the season, you get people come in just to run that race, and I think half the time they get in the way, and then, you know, like with you, it's a different story because you were new to the series and things have just turned around from like when you first said you were going to run the TV races and now you're running the whole season and running for Rookie of the Year in points, which I definitely think you'll get the Rookie of the Year. So cool to be to get that trophy.
Yeah, we've got a really good shot at that. Right now we're only a few points behind David Levine in the challenge, and we didn't actually get rookie points for the first race of the year. There was a problem with my patch, I guess, on my uniform, so they didn't award me points. So whenever we get to the 15th race, because they only give you points for 15 of the 20, we should be right there. And I think we've got a really good shot at that. And just like everything else, I try not to pay attention too much to the points, just get to the racetrack and do my best at every race, and the cards will fall where they will, and I think that we've got a really good shot at it.
How do you like the Hoosier tires? I know K&N and NASCAR runs the Goodyears, and I think that's an adjustment for you going from one series to the other. Like you said earlier, I think one of the other earlier times you called in after you ran the K&N race about the different tire, and which tire do you like better? And I mean, you have to run Hoosier. At one time, NASCAR did run Goodyears and Hoosiers, and it turned out to be a tire war, and a lot of tires blew out because everybody tried to make a softer tire, and of course, you push them harder because they're grippier, and you know what happens there. So, what's your feeling between the two?
Well, they're definitely different. One definitely has less grip than the other. The Goodyears are quite a bit, freer. They don't grip the track as well, but I don't know if I like one better over the other. It just really changes the way you adjust on the car to find grip. And I think the Goodyear tires slow us down a little bit more because you're sliding and you don't really have the same grip, especially at Columbus. That track was so small and you're basically turning all the way down both straightaways. You're still turning left. It's more of a circle than an oval corner, and you're sliding sideways, and you're basically, if you wanted to, when the tires are worn out a little bit, you could spin the tires halfway down the straightaway. It's just like a lot less grip. So we worked hard on getting side bite and getting grip out of those tires at the Columbus race. And with the Hoosiers, it's not such a big deal for finding grip. But at the same time, when those things, when you slip, you lose grip quite a bit faster. You know, it's harder to save a race car. So I don't know. They both have their pros and cons. And I would just say that I enjoy the challenge of finding grip with each of them.
Yeah, how about longevity on the tires? The Hoosiers, can you go more laps than you put on the Goodyears because they're less grip, or is a Goodyear a harder tire that holds up a little longer that you don't have to change them as much?
Yeah, the Goodyear is definitely a harder tire, and they hardly wear at all. They lose grip, and there's tire wear. You're not seeing anywhere near as much wear on the Goodyears as you do on the Hoosiers.
Well, that saves the team a few bucks then. They don't have to buy as many sets.
You would not believe the tire bills. It's absolutely insane. The Goodyears are definitely a lot cheaper than the Hoosiers, that's for sure.
Well, that's is that per, I guess, per race? Because basically, I mean, you know, you're using one the whole year, so that tire bills. But I imagine what's the difference per race for a set of tires? I mean, I've heard different stories for different tires, but do they let you see all that
stuff,
I guess?
Well, depends if you're going to one of the bigger tracks where you've got an interliner. That's where the big cost kind of is incurred. The tires that we ran at Pocono were quite expensive, and we ran the same ones at Iowa. The short track tires aren't anywhere near as expensive as the Speedway tires, so that's definitely it. And I guess the Goodyears in the K&N series, they don't run on as big of tracks as we do in the ARCA series as well, so they don't have the same expenses there.
I think some of your bigger tracks are like the Dover, which is, and that's a track you might want to play a little bit around on the iRacing. It's high banked all the way around, 9 degrees in the straightaway alone, and 24 in turns. It's concrete. Things happen really quick. So, as somebody who used to cover that track for years until I moved, I know, and I guess the only thing you can, that everybody will compare it to, and there's another track you might want to get to one of the years, Bristol. They call it Dover, a Bristol on steroids. Bristol,
yeah,
is basically half mile concrete, and high bank. Kind of just the banking is higher at Bristol because it's a half mile, but Dover is one of those deals where they consider it a self cleaner when you hit the wall anyway. So yeah, things just get bunched
absolutely
up and heavy there.
Yeah. No, I'm looking forward to all these different tracks, and more than anything, it's just improving my resume and improving my ability to adapt. ORP this weekend is just going to be one more track that we're going to learn, and we get actually two practice sessions while we're there, so that'll be better than what we had at Iowa the other week. And qualified and race all on the same day, so that's going to be really, I'm not sure how hot it's supposed to be, but it's going to be a really good day, and I look forward to it.
That's cool. Well, Sarah, thanks again. Oh, let's give out any place where people could find you on Twitter, Facebook, all that good stuff, to if they want to follow your path like I have and become fans. And, you know, it's always good to, you get the fans when you start off early, then you have them forever. Maybe the next Junior Nation could be Sarah Nation. Who knows, you know?
A lot of great fans come on board so far, and just very, very supportive. If anyone wants to check out my Facebook page, it's facebook.com/SCC Racing. And I'm on Twitter at S Cornette Ching. And other than that, just shoot me a message, say something to me, and I always reply. So thank you for having me on today.
Well, it's my pleasure, and good luck this weekend, and we'll talk about it next Monday on the show. So if you're not busy and want to tune in or correct me on something, feel free to call. The number's the same.
Sounds good. I absolutely will. Thank you.
All right. Take care now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. There you have my very special guest, Sarah Cornett-Ching, ARCA Racing rookie, sixth in the points, top 10 finishes in a bunch of her last races. Had a, like she said, had a glitch at Pocono, the motor let go, which is never kind of fun. So she's looking to go back. So she was running good. I think she was running, she had hit fifth or fourth, but and then at Iowa, chasing the track, and every driver knows what that's like. But anyway, it's all about something I've experienced recently, and that's Celsius energy drink. Burn more calories and lasting energy, and you don't get that. You know how you get, you drink some of these energy drinks, you get really hyper, and then you crash? Well, I didn't have that problem with this. And it's mighty tasty. I like that one with a sparkling cola because that's what flavor appealed to me. And it has no sugar, no aspartame for that, that funny aftertaste diet soda. You know how you drink a diet soda, you get that funny aftertaste from the aspartame. Well, this doesn't have that. Low sodium, which is good because some drinks are high in sodium. No artificial preservatives. No high fructose corn syrup, which is basically a sugar replacement for sweetener that they used over the years because the price of sugar got high. So a lot of beverage companies went to that. And no artificial colors or flavors. So it's amazing the mix of what they use for that. It tastes just like a cola. But, you know, I tried it, and you know what? It's on my shopping list now. So you know, but you don't have to go to Celsius.com and order direct, or go to one of your local GNCs and vitamin shops there, and pick some up. They got different flavors, carbonated and non-carbonated. I'm a soda guy, so I had to go with the carbonated. But feel free to try it. I'm sure you'll like it. I know I did sponsors of the number 8 Xfinity car driven by Blake Koch. And give him a try, and that's your ultimate fitness partner. Because you can burn up to 100 calories and more per can because it increases your metabolism. And, you know, if you have a work before your workout, So whether you walk the dog or work out at the gym, and, you know, I'm not really a gym junkie, so, but where I go for my other job, I do a lot of walking. I walk a few miles, about five miles a night there, so burning those extra calories where you can without feeling nasty afterward and ready to go to sleep. That's a good thing. So try it out. Celsius energy drink. And that's all I got to say. Anyway, you're listening to Garage Talk Live here on blogtalkradio.com. You can always find us out if you go to blogtalkradio.com/Garage Talk Live and pick up our podcast and past shows in case you missed somebody like Blake Koch or Sarah Cornett-Ching or Erica Enders or one of the other drivers we have on. So we always look to have a driver on and guests, either Miss Sprint Cup or, but as a matter of fact, I got to get a hold of Miss Sprint Cup because we're getting close, and I have to ask her about some new products Sprint has out. I'm not a big, I don't know, I might have to switch my carrier, but that's neither here nor there. Anyway, we'll be right back after these words. If you want to give us a call, the number is 646 1-800-273-1899, or you could Skype in. I've never Skyped in, but it's not a video call. It's actually a phone connection, so I'm sure. But you can fetch us via Skype, especially if you live somewhere else out in the world there. So, anyway, I'll be right back after this.
Cajun's Candle is a family-owned company that makes the finest quality hand-poured candles you'll find anywhere, in many different colors, sizes, and scents. They use only the best wax and scents to ensure your candle performs to its very best, each and every time. Cajun's uses a unique blend of hybrid wax that consists of a 50% soy and a 50% paraffin mixture, enabling the best of both worlds in candle making. The soy base is to ensure a cleaner burn while being environmentally friendly, and the paraffin is used to achieve a great scent throw and the ability to add color nicely, giving those bright, vibrant colors that catch your eyes. Cajun's Candles carries a wide variety of gel candles as well. Need a fundraiser for your school or church? Candles make a great item to use for fundraisers for any type of function you may have. Give Cajun's Candles a call at 610-960-5677 or find them on the web at www.cajunscandles.com. And for all you Facebook users, be sure to like them at Facebook at facebook.com/Cajun's Candle.
And we're back on Garage Talk Live. I'm Vince. Now, last week, Tammy Allman was on, who partners with me, and she's my Northern connection. We used to cover Dover, and then when I moved here, she stayed there and turned pro and all that. And she picked Kyle Busch to win. She got the right guy, Kyle Busch. Now, you gotta realize that we'll talk about him in a little bit, but I just want to go over the ARCA race at the This Is My Speedway 150 at the Iowa Speedway, which is a popular track. And Kenny Wallace made an announcement that when the Xfinity Series goes there, that's going to be his final race, because 540 starts. So maybe we'll try to get Kenny on for next week anyway. But back to the thing, Mason Mitchell took the checkered flag and beating out pole winner Kyle Weatherman, who wound up second. Cherry Hill's Tom Hessert was third. Austin Cindric is fourth. Matt Tift is fifth. Austin Wayne Self came home sixth. Blake Jones was seventh. Eighth, Grant Enfinger. Ninth, Todd Gilliland. It's probably, I wonder if he's related to David Gilliland, probably. He's out of North Carolina. Was ninth, and the aforementioned David Levine, who was the other rookie candidate with Sarah Cornett-Ching, wound up in 10th. Sarah did come in 14th after a 10th place start, then one lap down. He said she had a few problems handling a loose race car, but the girl, she's only been in this series since this year, so everything's new to her, and I got to commend her for what she's been able to do in such a short time, because that doesn't just happen. Anyway, in the points, Grant Enfinger holds down the top spot in 11 starts. He's got 3 wins and 7 top 10s. Josh Williams is second. Tom Hessert is third. Fourth is Austin Wayne Self. David Levine is fifth. And Sarah is in the 6th spot. She needs to make up a few points there. She's got 5 top 10s and 11 starts. And I'd like to see that column change into the top 5, so who knows. And anyway, she is hanging in the 6th spot. The only woman ever to finish that high in the series is Shauna Robinson, so there's a barrier that Sarah's trying to get through as well. So, and we'd like to see her post the win on the board, because imagine winning your first race in your rookie season. That's always pretty cool. And as far as the rest of the top 10 in points, Bo Lamastis in 7th, Thomas Prater 8th, and an old NASCAR veteran, Bobby Hamilton Jr. 9th, and James Swanson is the top 10 in points. Now, these points are not set in stone. Sarah's got a few to make up, so I know it's not a good thing to do, but Sarah, if you come up on David, run him into the wall, make sure he's out of the race so you gain some points. Nah, I'm just kidding. Don't do that. But the next race for her will be this coming weekend at Lucas Oil Raceway in Indianapolis. Used to be Indianapolis Raceway Park, but then it became O'Reilly Raceway Park. But Lucas Oil sponsor has naming rights, so join her on Friday the 24th at 9 p.m. for the Sioux Chief Power Tech PEX 200 presented by Federated Car Care. See if that one's on TV. So if you want to check it out Friday night, you can do so. I will have to tape the race because I'll be at my other job. So so check out Sarah coming Friday. Broadcast info. And we'll say, usually Fox Sports 1 has been picking it up. I don't see anything yet. But anyway, check your local listings. So it's Friday at 8 o'clock, so Fox Sports 1, there it is, 200 laps, and it is a short track. It's a pretty tight raceway there, so check out Sarah there. Anyway, on Saturday, up at the New Hampshire Motor Speedway out in Loudoun, Denny Hamlin wound up battling Austin Dillon and Kyle Busch there to take the checkered flag for Team Gibbs. And he started from the pole there as well, so he was a little bit of controversy. He got a little sideways and slid into Austin Dillon a little bit. It wasn't like there was anything intentional. I saw it. It was just a guy getting loose underneath you and sliding up in you. It's not like he wrecked him or anything yet. Either he finished second. Brad Keselowski managed to come home third. Kyle Busch wound up fourth and all that. He was also the outside pole sitter. Fifth was Daniel Suarez. Ty Dillon brought home the sixth spot. Reagan Smith was seventh. Darrell Wallace was 8th, 9th, Chase Elliott, and 10th was Brandon Poole. The 200-lapper, no overtime, average speed 98.3, margin of victory 0.5 seconds, 2 hours, 9 minutes, and 6 seconds. Took the run it, 6 cautions for 38 laps, 12 lead changes amongst 7 drivers. And the last caution coming at lap 166 out of the 200 lap or so went green for the rest of the way. So it was a little bit close. Hamlin had to get around a few guys to take the win, but he did. And as far as the points go right now in the top 10, in the Xfinity Series, it's Chris Buescher over Chase Elliott by 31 points. So come on, Chase. You want to repeat as a champ? You're getting there. Ty Dillon third, Reagan Smith fourth, Elliott Sadler fifth. Sixth is Darrell Wallace Jr., Daniel Suarez seventh, Brendan Gaughan eighth, Ryan Reed ninth, and tenth is Brian Scott. And we have plenty of races to go. It's only race number 17. So they don't run as many as the Cup Series, but they're close. They will be out at Indianapolis as well this weekend because we have the upcoming running of the Brickyard. So 402 years ago, the Xfinity Series went from Lucas Oil Raceway and to running at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And there was a big little bit of contention there between Penske drivers Sam Hornish Jr. and Brad Keselowski at the time. Keselowski taking the win and edging out his Penske teammate, Sam Hornish Jr., who would have had a nice feather in his hat had he won that one, because he did win the real race at Indy, the Indianapolis 500. But that's something you can't take away from the guy. But also a couple of IndyCar championships. And he was on his way to a Xfinity Series championship, but Austin Dillon was able to catch him and take it on the last race of the season. But I think it should have been Sam's, but it fell a little short. But that's neither here nor there. So on the Cup side, Kyle Busch, what can you say about this guy? Love him or hate him, he wins. He's fighting his way to get into a chase. He now has 3 wins this season and 3 in the last 4 after missing a good early chunk of the season. So he picked up 4 of the 5 bonus points. He was just short leading the most laps by 4. Brad Keselowski did that, who took over the second spot. Kevin Harvick coming home third. He was close to getting there, but I think the tires started going away late. Kyle Busch led the most when he needed to lead the most. But Keselowski fell a little short there. Keselowski was shagging him down, but I think they ran out of time, and if it would have came to one more pit stop, who would have got out of the pits first if they could have came in where they went out and lined up next to each other? Or maybe swap spots if Keselowski edged him out and forced Kyle Busch to start the race in the inside instead of restart inside instead of outside. Could have been a different story, but I don't know. Kyle Busch on restarts, he's good. It's hard to beat him on a restart if he's on the front row anywhere, because he somehow has the jump. They used to say Ron Hornaday was the king of restarts, but Kyle Busch, I think, might have learned from him and learned his lessons well, because I think he's the new king of restarts, at least especially in the Cup Series and in the Xfinity Series too, because he's running those races as well. But Harvick fell a little short for another top two, but he came in third. Can't argue with that. Joey Logano, fourth place spot. What can you say about him? He's hanging up near the top finishes. Of course, he's always one of the top qualifiers. He did start outside the front row. Your pole sitter was Carl Edwards, which being one of the Gibbs teams, of course, so is Kyle Busch, one of the Gibbs teams, as well as Denny Hamlin and Matt Kenseth. We had 4 of those guys in the top 10 because you had Dale Jr. 5th, Kenseth was 6th, right ahead of Edwards, who was 7th. Austin Dillon, good showing for him. Came home 8th. Jeff Gordon started 23rd, fought his way to 9th. He's still looking for that first win this year and getting locked into the chase. So we'll have to see if he can do that. If he does get in, he should get into the chase on points. He's considered 10th in the points as it is now. And the only one behind him without a win is, with a win is Casey Kane. No, Denny Hamlin. And Kyle Busch. So, if anything, only one ahead of him without points right now is Jamie McMurray. So, that's a point difference. Jamie had a rough day. Wound up finishing 26th. Had some problems. But the 2 hours, 56 minutes, and 6 seconds to take the race. Average speed, 108.5. Margin of victory on the caution. That's happened because the white flag was taken when the caution came out, and they threw it when they knew Kyle was going to come around to catch the wreck. So they didn't want him getting gathered up in it. So he was able to take the checkered flag. They usually don't happen, but being the white flag was flown at the end of the race, no matter what happened. So anyway, as far as the chase goes, it's the top 16. This is according to points now. It's the way NASCAR has it listed. They should have it listed according to wins and then points, and then, maybe put Kyle Busch's name below the top 16 with an asterisk to see you. He's looking for that top 30, and right now he's in 33rd. 30th place is David Gilliland, 305 points. Kyle Busch has 247, so he's got 51 points he's got to make up. That's quick math. I might be a little off on that. I don't keep a calculator in front of me to check it, so anyway, he can probably do that next race. He had to finish 14th or better. That gap is wide now until Richmond. He has to finish 20th or better in every race on average. So, not every race. On average, 20th or better to make that. But I think he should be in that top 30 in a couple of races. So, don't worry about that. NHRA this week was off. The IHRA was in action. We'll get to what they did in a little bit. Let's see what Kyle Busch had to say after on his race-winning run.
All right, we are now joined by our race-winning crew chief, Adam Stevens. Adam, this is the team's third win in 4 weeks. You guys have won at a road course, mile and a half, and now at a short track. Talk about the speed you've had in this car over the past few weeks and the team's performance today.
Yeah, we've been putting good cars on the track. I think last week we arguably had the best car, or certainly good enough to run with them. This week we definitely had a top two or three car, and, we had some misfortune turn into some good fortune with the way those cautions fell there when there was oil on the track and he thought he had a flat right front. But, part of the game is about preparing a good car and executing all day and putting yourself in positions to take advantage of things like this. Plenty of times you put yourself in a position like this and it goes against you, but today it definitely went for us.
We'll go ahead and open it up to questions. Please state your name and affiliation.
Actually, Adam Stevens, crew chief, was taking over for Kyle, and I guess he was a little late getting to the party. But uh, But next week, or actually this weekend, we're coming up to the Brickyard 400, one of the biggest races of the year, one of the most prestigious tracks in motorsports, if not the most prestigious track in motorsports. And it's time to make our picks because we're getting close to the end of the show. Now, here's a scenario. It's one of the home tracks for Jeff Gordon. He did win this race last year, but guess who came in behind him? This past week's winner, Kyle Busch. Denny Hamlin was in the third spot. Fourth was Kenseth, and fifth was Logano. So, based on what I see, I'm not going to go with Kyle this week. Nothing against Kyle. I'm not saying he can't win it. I'm just saying three in a row, that's really stretching it. Jeff Gordon, does he have what it takes to win this year? He seems to be falling a little short. Not used to the new rules package as some of the older drivers have been having problems with. Jamie Little said that after talking with a bunch of them, which she talks to them all the time. She's there. So I have to heed her advice. So I'm going to stick to a younger guy. I'm looking at three Gibbs cars in the top five. So I'm going to go out and say I'll pick Denny Hamlin this week. So that's going to be my pick. The Brickyard 400. It's probably one of the few times I've ever actually picked him. That's who I'm going to go with. I'm looking for a theme song. If you have any ideas, go to our Facebook page, Garage Talk Live. If you have a like on it, and send me some suggestions. I'll tune them in and check them out and. Who knows if you're the show start in a couple of weeks with a theme song, then you'll know you got the pick, and I'll give you credit for making the suggestion once the choice is made. If not, I'll try to find my own. But anyway, hope you've enjoyed the show. Special thanks to my guest, Sarah Cornett-Ching. Pleasant girl to speak to. Always glad to have her on. She's always happy to come on. And wish her luck this week at Lucas Oil Raceway in Indianapolis, and I'd like to see her get into that top five, so hopefully that'll happen. It's amazing what this girl's done. I'm Vince Bonfigli, wishing you all a good day and good racing. We'll see you all next week, or we'll talk to you all next week, actually. Follow me on Facebook at facebook.com/GarageTalkLive or GTL Vince on Twitter. I don't tweet much, but only when I have special guests coming on. See you. Talk to you next week. Bye now.